Hello, hello there. Welcome to another edition of The OK Show. This is a podcast brought to you by The Current, and it's the show where real musicians talk about their real lives. I'm your host, Andrea Swenson, and today, a conversation with Sarah White, the inventive hip-hop and soul artist who is based here in Minneapolis.
Somewhere in those crazy places when you're not looking for anything else, you find love.
So Sarah White has been on the scene for a long time now. She got her start here in the early 2000s, at least publicly, when she began her hip-hop career in the group Traditional Methods. That's an act that she started with one of my colleagues here at The Current, Sean McPherson, who you might know as Twinkie Jiggles of High Respects fame. And she first landed on my radar when she started the band Black Blondie. One of my favorite anecdotes from those early Black Blondie days was reading about the story of how the band got its name. Sarah White is effortlessly stylish. She's hands down one of the hippest and best-dressed women in the Twin Cities. So she showed up to a band meeting sporting a frohawk and dressed to the nines, and her bandmate Samara Linton exclaimed, "You look like a Black Blondie." I still think about her in this context, combining all of the different elements of punk and hip-hop culture into a genre-blurring style. Her latest solo work combines cosmic, ambient, afro-punk with the new wave of soulful electro R&B that's become so popular these last few years. And when she plays with a live band, they're well-versed in everything from jazz to hip-hop. I can't think of another artist in town who's quite as cutting edge and so interested in where music is headed next and as connected with the larger socio-political and artistic movements as Sarah is. Sarah is a beacon, and we're all just watching to see where she's going next. All of which brings us to today and her appearance on The OK Show, which I'm super excited about. So in addition to being a creative force in the Twin Cities, Sarah is also a vocal advocate for self-care and self-love. This is an issue that is particularly pressing for young African-American women who pour a lot of themselves into social movements like Black Lives Matter. She's frequently posting updates to social media about her yoga practice and her own journey towards self-love and inner peace. And she hosts private healing gatherings for women in her community who need to decompress. I was intrigued to learn more about Sarah's journey and find out how all of these things come together. How does yoga affect an artist's ability to command a stage? And how does her work on herself and her outlook impact her art that she's putting out into the world? It's an honor to share today's conversation with you.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming over.
I'm glad to be here.
So I'm super excited to talk to you. I've been following your music for a really long time. And, you know, to start with, could you just take me back to the beginning and tell me what was it that first got you interested in music and made you want to be a musician?
I'd say like when I was young, I grew up in church. And so music kind of goes hand in hand with church. I would sing with the kids in the choir. In school, I did band. I was in concert choir in high school. I think the first thing that really actually like sparked me though was when I got to be a part of a musical. It was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh.
And I got to like miss junior high, miss our classes, and go get paid to be on this like Broadway show. And it was at the State Theater. And I was surrounded around these like adults that were making a living doing this.
Yeah.
And something kind of clicked where I'm like, whoa, you know, this can be a business. This is something else. And from there, I started to experiment a little more. But it wasn't until I found hip hop that I kind of was like, wow, I can use this as expression. Like I can use this as a way to get out emotions and get out all of this frustration that I felt like no one would listen to.
Wow, that's interesting. So it was almost like a business opportunity first.
Well, yeah, kind of, but I didn't see myself as actually having any way to be successful doing it. You know, it was like something I saw other people doing. I think that at first I thought of it as a career.
Right.
But then when I found hip hop, it was like a pulse. It was like a rhythm. It was like a community. It was like a heart song. Like I realized for me, it was really powerful. Like when I found that it changed my life.
What was your gateway into hip hop?
I started going to like Headspin, and me and my crew, they call us like the Southside hot girls. We would just kind of go and hang out underage, fake IDs, and watch all the shows. We watched the Battle Cats, got the mixtapes. I started by imitation first, you know? I would do it behind closed doors, but until I got comfortable enough to start to kind of like poke my little head into the ciphers. And, you know, it wasn't easy, but once I started, they're like, oh my God, there's a girl rapping, you know? And I'm like, hey. And that was kind of my first little way to push my way in.
Were you treated like a novelty? Just being
female?
On some
sides, but on other sides, I was definitely like challenged a lot. You know, like there were so many times where I felt like I'd kind of get treated as a joke in the cipher. Like, cool, you're here because you're a woman, but let's hear your bars, you know? And that kind of fueled me. It taught me to work harder. You know, I would seriously just sit and write raps like all the time. I cannot believe how much time I put into writing raps when I was younger, because I wanted to really be tight. I wanted to be good because I was good.
Yeah.
Not good because I wasn't a guy.
Yeah.
I feel your presence, clarity comes easy. Yearning for more than words on the surface. Fighting against the grain, living on purpose. We stay rooted. Brooklyn, Minneapolis, where you at? Community, it's you and me, unity. We got to be bigger than the mainstream. Living the dream, walking closely with the spirit. I can hear it, hear it, hear it.
Dreams are gonna get a little brighter, even if you don't see how it's gonna happen. Dreams are gonna...
That's interesting that you started out mimicking. I've been studying some jazz piano over the last few years, and that's like totally the way that I've been learning how to improvise, is they just have you listen to a lot of records of like really, really good improvisers and then transcribe it. And there's something really cool about like getting up inside someone's brain.
Yeah.
To be like in someone's creative process like that, it can be really enlightening.
It is. I mean, I felt like sometimes I would even write them out and try to understand like the rhythms that people came up with, the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And even now it blows my mind. Like I listen to so much stuff now that I'm like, I feel like my brain doesn't work that way anymore. I'm like, how do people come up with this? Like, how can you break your own habits of habitually writing the same way?
Yeah.
Like, I literally want to pull my dreads out trying to, like, write differently half the time. But then, back then, I felt so inspired and refreshed by studying and listening to other people's styles that it helped me to keep changing. You know, I'd always try something different. I'd always try to, like, have one bar that was different than the other bar. And push myself, you know, push myself with content, push myself with style. And I did have a lot of support because I got in traditional methods right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I had Zach who'd come over and like I could read on my flows, like, oh, they're so, like, some of them were so basic. Like, I walked in my room, picked up the broom. Like, he would listen to all of them. He'd just sit and listen and be like, all right, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? And
so not much time had passed before you started performing in traditional methods?
I feel like right when people started to hear me rap, even though they weren't like all my raps initially, they were like, okay, wait, something, what did you just say? You know, like, let's try something. And then I did start freestyling more. And that's when Zach kind of was like, me and Twinkie Jiggles had a talk. We've decided we're going to teach you. Whoa. And we're going to form traditional methods. It didn't have a name at the time, but so we did our first show at Briar Lake Bowl with three songs, you know, just like kind of cameoed at a High Respects set. And that was the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long into performing in that way was it that you started to sing as well?
Well, like when I was in traditional methods, singing was a situation. Like they would try to get me to sing on things and I loathed it. I'd be so nervous. I would sing so quiet that they'd be like, you know, like have to turn me way up in the studio. Cause like I was taking voice lessons at the time and my teacher was just kind of letting me know that like my range was never going to be like a normal woman. Like something was wrong with my range. I should try to figure out what was wrong with my throat, get it fixed. Like just, I shouldn't sing the way I sing or be the way I was. And it made me feel bad, obviously. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, dang, you know, I just suck at singing. So that's why I focused on rapping, because I could be good at that because my voice is raspy and it sounds good over beats. And I sang I think on like 2 songs on Traditional Methods album, maybe 3. And that was it for me for a while. And then, I don't know, something happened around Black Blondie time. I think a lot of it was working with Samara, and I just started singing more and more. And it's like, fuck it. You know, this is my voice.
Yeah.
This is who I am.
Yeah. Well, that surprises me because I think your voice is so distinct and cool.
Thank you.
It's so you.
Yeah.
Which I guess someone was trying to tell you that that wasn't right. But
I think it's part of just accepting you for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's hard to accept yourself, especially in the music industry where there's all these standards of like ways you should be. So I think being a woman who was trying to like embrace hip hop, number one, also kind of like, I was just like a weird black uptown girl who loved skateboarding and like Deftones. And like, you know, I already felt like I was having a hard time accepting who I was already. So then to have someone else from the outside kind of like give me a nudge, I just kind of went into this like self-loathing as a musician stage where I was just like, well, my voice sucks. Like, this is who I am, but I'm going to try to like it. And then all of a sudden I just kind of like dug it. I dug the raspiness. I dug the scratchiness. I dug my limited range. You know, I just accepted it.
Black clouds floating your way. Black clouds floating away. I'm sitting in the bubble trying to find some love. Looking at your situation and I'm feeling so pent up.
So I'm curious about Black Blondie because I was introduced to that. I think that's the first of your music that I was introduced to. You guys placed in like a Pick to Click poll, I want to say.
Yeah.
Maybe that's around the time that it got on my radar. How did that group start?
Samara Linton, the other singer in Black Blondie, she came to Traditional Methods release party. And we had like known each other from like junior high. And she was like in the front, like, hey, Sarah, you know, we should sing together. And I was 5 months pregnant, actually. So I was just kind of like, my career is over. You know, like, I'm pregnant. Nice to see you, but I'm about to go disappear. You know, like, I'm going to have a baby. And then after, we connected, and I had to do something at, like, B-Girl B, and I asked her to sing with me. And then we just started working on more. We couldn't find anybody to be in our band initially because we didn't know what it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like me and Samara randomly like, be in our band. We don't know what it's called. We don't know what it's going to be, but be in our band. And a lot of people weren't down. But like Tasha was one of the first ones to be like, you guys are weird. We'll try it, you know? And then eventually Liz Draper came in, and then Kevin Hunt from Traditional played with us for a while. And that's kind of how it just kind of formed. And then it started to evolve and change. And then all of a sudden we kind of like found our sound,
yeah.
You know? And yeah, kept it going for a while.
Yeah. Those were some great, well, the songs that you guys put out in those early days and the shows, it was really, I had never really seen a band like that before.
Yeah.
Especially locally.
I think now I see how special it was. And at the time, I just felt like, I don't know, I think I was getting exhausted by the scene in general and just kind of like not seeing a potential of anywhere it could go, you know? Just kind of like, oh, what does it matter? You know, like, I don't know. I was kind of being like bitter.
Do you feel like looking back now, as you've seen, you know, specifically like women in hip hop, that presence kind of get more traction? Do you feel like you were part of kind of opening some doors for people and making that more accessible for women?
I do. I also feel like women have changed. I feel like women now, not saying they don't need those doors, but they're bad. They're ready, you know, they're gonna do it. And it's so great. I wish that there would have been more of that when I was younger. But I do think that the scene was ready because of people like me and Desdemona and even Dessa. Pavielle's been around for a long time. Like, there was a lot of underground women in hip hop and soul and rock, you know, that were kind of like loosening up the groups of scenes and, you know, just like the sausage fest of a scene. We were kind of like, hey, we're already here. And then now that these like younger women are coming in that are just like their music is tight, their style is tight, their confidence is tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's time, you know? And now I'm being inspired by them. You know, I'm like watching and just being wowed and taking notes by all the other women that are killing the scene right now. And not killing the scene as women, killing the scene as musicians and as artists.
So one thing that's been coming up a lot in these conversations for this podcast and that I'm really interested in learning about people's approach with is this idea of self-care. And I really like following you on Facebook because you often talk about yoga and things that you're doing for your own self-care. And I wish that I could say I did half the things that you do. But I think that you set a really positive example for people about prioritizing that. And I'm curious, you know, that phrase, I've just heard it pop up a lot like this year. But how long do you think that you've been intentionally like prioritizing your health and your body and just really taking care of yourself in that way?
It's funny because, okay, I feel like I take care of myself, but I feel like there's another side of myself that is not prioritizing self-care right now. So it's really interesting to look at it because I'm like, here I am trying to facilitate caring spaces where we do yoga and we heal and we talk, but I overwork, I undersleep, I don't talk about things that are going on. I do all the things that I know are not caring.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I don't feel like I'm doing any self-care. I am in the general sense with the world. Like I do yoga. I do take time to meditate. I eat healthy. But on the other side of it, I feel like I've never done it.
Mm.
So that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I started doing yoga when I first got pregnant with my first daughter, because I was like, holy, whoa, I'm having a child. Like, I need to go inward or something.
Yeah.
Like, what am I supposed to do if I'm having a baby? And Regal gave me a gift certificate for prenatal yoga. That was the first time I really learned how to, like, breathe in a way that is healing. And from there, I did make a shift where I started to, like, be more conscious. I went raw for a little while, you know, really a little while. Started, like, taking time for myself in that way. But I don't think I've in any way learned how to prioritize it. I think that, yeah, I think I'm doing a bad job at it, to be honest. But it is something that I'm really aware of. So I think that in that way, I'm doing it more than most people do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It sounds crazy, though. I'm like, I'm the worst. But I know I'm the worst, and when I know I'm doing bad, I try to do something for myself that's caring.
Yeah.
I'll make a smoothie, put a lot of amazing things in it, and then treat myself horribly the rest of the day. Like, seriously. But I'm trying to work on that because I'm raising daughters, and a Facebook post isn't equal to the way they see me. They see me doing yoga, but they also see me, like, not sleeping and staying up and working all night or whatever.
Right.
Freaking out on them because I'm exhausted, or those kind of things are like leaving ripples in their spirits. So I'm trying my best to figure out how to be better at that. But God, who knows?
I wonder if anyone is like awesome at it.
Somebody is. I feel like people on Instagram look awesome at
they
it.
They do, yeah.
I'm like, dang it, why can't I do what you're doing?
I tend to swing the other way. Like, I totally neglect my body. Like, I'll put off eating for a whole day, not for any reason other than that I'm so focused on other stuff, like thinking about working. And I just, it's like the last priority on my list for some reason. I'll, like, you know, if I have a big project, I pull an all-nighter. It's just, I don't treat my body very well. And, but with the mental stuff, I'm like, been working really hard in the last couple of years more on that side of things. So in some ways, I guess I'm trying.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's so many different
pieces
and so many things. Like, some things are more cut and dry than others. I mean, you could work on your mental health for 20 years and still have a ways to go.
Still have a ways to go. Well, that's something that, I don't know, I've always kind of struggled with really high expectations and standards for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to call it, like, I don't want it to be, like, a woman race thing. But I feel like a lot of times Black women want to be strong like want to feel like they can carry the weight of the world and carry the kids up there too and carry all of the issues with society and look good doing it and be like, cool, we got this. I've always been like that. And after I come out of really hard things, I'm like, wow, I probably should have went to therapy, or like, I probably should have asked somebody for help instead of doing that by myself. Like, that was really hard.
Yeah.
But I don't ever ask for help, and I don't really ever give myself that break. So that's something that I've noticed more this year, because I went through a huge like shift in my family, and I'm like, whoa, I went through all this and I haven't tried to get any help. Mm. I'm still trying to like handle everything myself, handle the bills, handle the kids. Like, I got this. I can finish this album because I need to keep up with that, or else that's not going to be good if I take too long to do that. Plus, I should be shooting everything. Like, I just kind of keep piling more onto what I should be.
Yeah.
And lately I've been like, whoa, dude, this is like impossible to keep up with the standards I'm creating for myself. I don't know. I want to make time for my mental health. I want to make time for my physical health. I'm definitely hearing that it's time for my body, for my mind, for my life, you know.
So when you think about what you're going to pass on to your kids, does that make you think about the things that you experienced as a kid? Like, do you think about where those expectations come from or when they got rooted in your mind?
I mean, I wonder often. Sometimes I don't know. It's like my mom even says, like, even as a kid, I was really like independent. Like, I moved out when I was a teen. I ran away. Wanted to go to raves and be bad. I never went back. I was like running away from music and boys. Mm. Like, I've always been this way. And I don't really know if it's from my mom. You know, I don't know where it's from. I don't know if it's from me wanting to like press back against like the wall of society that I feel like has been pressing against me since I was young.
Yeah.
It's like I've always wanted to just overcome any barriers and do it with a smile and do it with my head up. And that's not a bad thing, but I think that there has to be a point where you allow yourself to be vulnerable, be sad, be hurt, be open. So like part of what's been helping me is like limiting my time online. So one thing I have been doing that's really good the last 3 weeks is I'll wake up and go run before I answer any emails or get online.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not a runner. I don't like to run. I literally have to put on like throw some D's on it or something like to motivate me, because I'm like, I'm just not a runner. And it's really new. It's because I feel like my stress levels were getting like to a new high where I was like, whoa, I don't know how I'm gonna do this. And then when like all the stuff went down at the precinct, I was running harder. I was like, I worked out to the point that I threw out my back, because I was like, I didn't know how to like physically hold on to the emotions I was feeling.
Wow.
It was like so overwhelming. So, and they weren't like on the street where I didn't feel safe with my kids being out there sometimes like patrolling on, you know, at the precinct.
Yeah.
There were ways for me to work from the inside out and then be kind of like a better mom, which in the end I feel like is just as revolutionary sometimes as being on the front line, you know, with a mic in my hand. And I felt some shame with that. I felt a little guilt, like that I should be more out there. And I was out there, you know, as much as I could, but I also felt like I need to be there to get my kids from the bus stop, and maybe running is my way today, you know? Yeah.
Talking a lot about your musical life, but if we zoom out for a moment and look at all the things that you've done, you know, photography is a passion of yours, organizing these safe spaces, healing spaces, as you said, and creating environments where people can come and make this new kind of art and music and feel safe and comfortable expressing themselves. Is that all part of you as an artist? Do you feel like that kind of community activism and engagement, is that part of your art as well?
I feel like I'm learning now that it is. I didn't really know before until someone had me take a step back and look at what I've shot, and look at what I've created over the last like 10 years. And I realized that at least with my photography, oftentimes I am the voice of like the community. I'll go in the spaces that like press isn't going into and I'll document. And I started feeling like, wow, this is really powerful. Like, I can be a lens that they trust. It's not like an outsider coming in. It's like, I'm there to help anyways. So I'm going to bring my camera and shoot, you know? And now I charge more for it. Before I'm like, I'm just here anyway. But now I'm like, wait a second. But I really love it. It's like, it makes me feel useful. You know, it makes me feel like I'm here for a reason. Because like everybody, sometimes I'm like, why am I alive? Like, what is my purpose? But I feel like, if nothing else, if I can leave behind a map of what's going on in the community and like a pulse and a voice when I'm gone, then it was worth it, you know? And I started feeling like in these communities that are working really hard, people aren't taking time to like heal or sleep or all the things I'm not taking time for. So if I force myself to create a space once a month at least where they have to do yoga, I have to be there to teach it, which means I have to take time. And that's helped me, you know?
Yeah.
So I selfishly create safe spaces so then I feel safe, you know? We need it.
Yeah.
Like, we always are crying and breaking down in that space because we realize that, like, we haven't had an hour to think about what we're going through.
Yeah.
Or we don't have anybody to hug or listen to or talk to about it. So it's really cool. It's beautiful and powerful to have those. And whenever I can get my nerves up enough to like teach, I make a Facebook event and we do it, you know.
That's amazing.
It's scary.
Yeah. Why is it scary?
I'm terrified to teach yoga because I feel like, I don't know, I don't feel very yogic, yogi. I don't know. I feel like I have so much more I need to do and practice before I can lead other people. But what I've learned through 2 yoga trainings now is that it's all about being present. It's all about accepting who you are, where you are, when you are. I'm just trying to like really live that.
Yeah.
And so then I just say, just do it. You know, like, you're never going to be this perfect yoga teacher that you're waiting to be. You're never going to be the perfect singer or mom, you know, or partner. So just make a step. I think yoga is such a mirror to like your practice with everyday life. I know when I do yoga a lot, I'm so much easier on myself with being myself because I'm patient. Like, I'm listening, I'm aware. But when I don't make time to even listen and be aware, then I forget to be compassionate with myself. And one thing about yoga that is big is ahimsa, which is nonviolence. And it's really easy to think of nonviolence as like an outer thing, you know, like not killing animals, not hurting other people.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest part is within yourself. And I remember I just did this yoga training in Costa Rica, and when we had to like write about ahimsa, I was like a puddle. I was like sobbing because I was thinking of all the bad things I say to myself on the daily. And not like I'm a victim, like we all do it. It's like it's like the record playing in our head where it's like, you're not good enough, or like, you shouldn't do that. And I'm not saying that on the outside, I'm very confident. I know I can do anything I want to do. I just got to do it. Like, yeah. I know that. But just like that constant language that you have to listen to that you're combating with, it's like yoga and ahimsa helps me to be conscious of it and to let it dissolve, at least for that time that I'm thinking about it. You know?
Right. Well, I want to hear more about your music that you're working on now.
It's just been like such a long time coming because we had a project done with Shiro Dame. And then with like the breakup, I had to lose my album. And before that, there was kind of something else. And so like, there's been so many shifts in my life that I'm like working on music and then I don't get the finished product. So even now I'm like scared. I'm like, what's going to happen in between now and the weekend? You know, like, I just want to record my album, but it just feels good that it's there.
What's it like to come out of being in a band with a partner and then going back to your own music?
Crazy. It feels like somebody pulls out a rug underneath your feet, you know? Like, I only, all my projects involved him since I quit Black Blondie, so.
Oh, wow.
For 11 years.
Okay.
You know, I just felt like really overwhelmed. I didn't know where to start. It felt like I wasn't gonna make music. Like, I just didn't know what to do, you know? And not only that, but I just felt almost like shame that like I had to start over again. Mm. I'm like, why do I have to keep starting over? I'm not gonna get booked. Like, people aren't gonna think I'm ever gonna have anything done. And I started worrying a lot about what other people would think. And yeah, it was rough in the beginning. It was really rough. And even now it's rough, you know, because I'm still trying to like figure out who I am separate. Because as you know, when you're with somebody for a long time, you kind of blend into each other in many ways and you start forgetting who you were before.
Yeah.
And you turn into a different person. So I kind of feel like I came out of a long relationship as the person I was before I went in, which was like a 21-year-old confused party girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who was rapping in traditional methods. I got pregnant with a guy I knew for 3 weeks while I was recording that album. So I was just like, whoa, I'm here again. But I'm older.
Yeah.
And life is a little less forgiving at this point. So I need to be smart and think fast and pull it together, you know?
That's interesting to me to have to go through the process of like kind of finding your footing as a person, as an artist, all at the same time. I imagine it'd be hard to untangle the two processes.
Yeah, to make such a big change so quickly has been very world-shifting for me. I feel like I was kind of a little more stable in general before. And then right away I was trying to find like things to latch on to pacify me or to like calm me down or like routines, you know, just things that make me feel like I was stable. Because I'm like, who am I? Who am I separate from this relationship? Who am I separate from Shiro Dame that I started that I thought was going to be a thing? Like, you like, who am I as a singer without a producer attached to me? What kind of music do I want to make? You know, like, what do I want to say when no one's listening as closely? And it's been interesting because at the same time, I'm learning how to be a parent in a different way.
Yeah.
And I never thought I would not parent with a partner, you know, at the same time or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know who I am anymore, but I know I'm myself. So I just keep doing that.
Well, thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
This was really fun.
You feel like you got something?
Yeah.
I feel like I was rambling. I'm like, what am I talking about right now?
You're great. You're great.
Oh, my God.
Thank you so much to Sarah White, my guest on today's OK Show. I'm going to post some links over on the blog to all of Sarah's recent work. You can watch her latest videos and also be sure to check out the beautiful portraits that Nate Ryan took of Sarah to accompany today's episode. You can actually find all of the OK Show episodes over at thecurrent.org as well as on iTunes or through whatever podcast app that you enjoy. Just search for The OK Show. And please, if you've been enjoying it, I would love it if you would leave me a rating because I don't have a rating yet. And I want one. I want to see what you think. My name is Andrea Swenson. This is going to be the last OK Show for a little bit, probably about a month. I'm taking a break to book some new guests, kind of recalibrate a little bit, work ahead a little bit. So if you have any ideas, people that you would love to hear on this show, I would love to hear it. You can follow me on Twitter at Slingshot Annie or send me an email. It's A Swenson, that's A-S-W-E-N-S-S-O-N at npr.org. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know if there's someone that you would just love to hear in this setting, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, I am here to tell you that it's going to be okay.
Science. Knowledge.
Man, you crazy. Ooh.